Welcome to the Max Move Podcast, a podcast about New York City theater. This is Lindsay Behrens. I'm the founder of Max Move, a website that provides recommendations to theater beyond Broadway in New York City. The Max Move Podcast is now available on iTunes. Just search for Max Move under podcasts. That's M-A-X-A-M-O-O. Today's podcast was recorded a few weeks ago and is all about the shows in early 2014 that we're looking forward to seeing. We also discuss a special, fabulous show that all of us saw recently, and we close with some commentary on a hodgepodge of issues, including subscription memberships and Roundabout's revival of a revival with Alan Cumming in Cabaret. Enjoy the show.
We'll start with introductions. Nicole, why don't you start?
Hi, I'm Nicole. I blog about theater at Mildly Bitter's Musings and The Creptacular.
David?
I'm David Levy. I blog all over the place, but the most reliable place to find me is at itsthelevy.net.
Great. And I'm Lindsay. I'm the founder of Max Moo, a website about New York City theater. So we're going to start by talking about a show we all recently saw, and then we're going to talk about all the shows we're looking forward to in the first 3 months or so of the year. So The Last Two People on Earth at Abrams Art Center. I think we've all three seen it in the last week. So we'll go, David, do you want to describe it for us?
Absolutely. So this is a production of Classic Stage Company, and it is a two-person musical described as an apocalyptic vaudeville starring Taylor Mack and Mandy Patinkin as the last two people on Earth who find each other after some sort of apocalyptic incident and only communicate to each other using existing popular song from the last, 100 or so years.
What did you think about it?
I loved it. So when this was announced, and it's officially a workshop, it's not technically a production, although it looks and feels and smells like a production. And it was announced as a workshop with $75 minimum ticket price, and I got really angry. And let me tell you that had I known what it was, I totally would have spent the $75. Luckily, I got discount tickets, so I didn't have to. It was just, from start to finish, just, I don't know, delightful and wonderful and so much better thought out than the description might have you believe.
And deceptive in its sort of simplicity, yet I got pulled in. I was sitting there watching it. The songs are going. I'm like, oh, lovely, lovely, whatever, song after song, okay. But all of a sudden, I was emotionally invested in a way that I wasn't anticipating.
How did you get your discount tickets?
So I ended up getting mine through TDF. Although there are also rush seats available, which is irrelevant by the time you hear this because it's closing this weekend.
I thought it was great also, although I would watch Taylor Mack do absolutely anything. He's amazing.
Is this an original creation by him?
All of them together. And the other two names that we need to mention are Susan Stroman, who's the director, and Paul Ford, who is the musical genius putting all these songs together and music directing and making it sound of a piece.
Although adorable, there was like an 85-year-old man sitting behind me who, before the lights came down, started saying how the last time he was at the Henry Street Settlement, which is the building that the Abrams Art Center is now in, he's like, he was 15 years old.
Huh. Oh my God.
So 70 years ago. I wanted to just listen to him and have him tell me a story. But
well, I did think it was interesting where they chose to stage that because it was produced by Classic Stage Company, who's theater is on 13th Street, but they held this performance down at Abrams Art Center, which is on the Lower East Side. And I overheard a conversation when I was walking to the theater of a patron who's clearly a subscription member of Classic Stage Company saying,
a whiner.
Oh, is that what? A type?
What in the world are we doing down here? Like, where, first of all, where are we?
Let me tell you where you are. You are down here? The street from Donut Plant, so do not complain.
And the person who, I don't know what authority this person had to speak for the production, but this person explained that it was the choice of the creative team to hold this there. And I just thought that was really interesting.
It was a great venue for it because, you know, if it is this, I mean, even the connection, like listening to this 85-year-old man behind me, just thinking about the history of vaudeville and the old vaudeville stages and just that feeling in that space, I felt like lent to that style as well.
Funny, I just was like, oh, they need a proscenium and here is one. But you're right. I mean, for me, when I hear Henry Street Settlement, I hear Henry Street, which brings me to Funny Girl, which has a whole song about Henry Street. So like, even if I wasn't as conscious of that, I was clearly going through my subconscious.
As you noted, David, this was a workshop. So is there any rumor of additional production?
You know, there's an official rumor, meaning I haven't heard it from anyone. But if you look at that playbill, the producers include the ART and Cambridge, where I believe they had a previous, right, and the Dodgers, who are huge international producers of theater. So I'm sure we'll see more of this. if not New York, then on the road, you know.
I mean, it's yeah. I mean, I had someone on Twitter actually when I was tweeting about this, and Taylor Mack, someone from Australia, was like, "Oh yeah, one of my friends convinced me to fly from Adelaide to Melbourne to see Taylor Mack, and it was totally worth it." And it's true. It's great to know that like he's
Taylor
out
Mack
there.
Is huge in Australia.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He goes there all the time and performs at the Sydney Opera House.
Oh my god,
he's a huge star there.
Oh. I just want to like give Taylor Mack a big hug and like, yeah, I don't know, like. Have a sleepover and like do each other's hair, even though he's bald, and like you know, sing show tunes together. Like that's just like the vibe I get from him. He's just like, I don't know, like
you want to be his friend. Everyone yes. does. Okay. Anything else anyone wants to talk about something they've seen recently?
I'll just say, because I mentioned it already, the Joyconis Christmas Spectacular. So Joyconis is one of these phenomenons that sort of exists in weird pockets, like of the internet in New York, where like there's I don't know of any young songwriter who has more of a presence on YouTube, not only from videos that he's put out, but videos that like random teenage fans around the country put of his songs. And he, you know, for someone who's really never had major productions of his shows, he had a show in LA this year and won the same show at Barrington this summer, The Black Suits. But otherwise, like his shows don't get done, but his music has really got out there. I didn't get it until I went to see him live at 54 Below for his Halloween show. And then there's something about, you know, in much the way that Taylor Mack sort of exudes this, like, you want to hang out with him vibe. Joe, and not just Joe, but like the whole family of people that Joe surrounds himself with, and he calls it the Joyconis and Family Christmas Spectacular. It's that same thing. It's just like, oh God, they're having so much fun. Like, how can you not have fun with them? It was like a super fun Christmas party with like 800,000 young performers on stage and a couple of special guest stars. Tonight I was there was Chris Rodriguez and Julia Murney and Susan from Title of Show. What's her last name?
Blackwell.
and Annie Golden, who's like, you know, part of the family. It was just fun. And even if you think he might not be your thing, next time he has a show going on, I highly recommend it if you're up for something that's like a little bit, I don't know, like a little bit of a left turn from your typical Broadway cabaret fare.
Sounds interesting. Okay, well, now let's talk about what shows we are looking forward to seeing in the upcoming year. Nicole, would you like to begin?
Sure. I think sort of a curiosity that's coming off Broadway is Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner, which has actually been updated by a British playwright, Roy Williams, for a mixed racial cast.
Updated from what?
From the original Alan Stipta. Silito. He wrote a short story, and I think it has been, I don't know if it's been turned into a play. It was definitely a movie. It's quite famous movie.
I just heard Long Distance Runner here sports and kind of shut off.
No. No, it was like famous for, because I mean, Alan Silito was one of those sort of the angry young men of the sort of British period, along with Look Back in Anger. That guy, you know. Come on, guys. This is really embarrassing.
This is not we now need British to edit. Council you're sitting here with. Where is it going to be?
It's going to be at the Atlantic Theater Company.
Okay, David.
I am super excited, first of all, in general, for everything that the Public Theater does ever. But specifically in March, the Public Lab series is coming back, which is their developmental like workshop-y thing, with a new play by Susan Laurie Parks called Father Comes Home from the Wars, Part 1, 2, and 3. I believe that it is one play despite the title, Part 1, 2, 3. I think it's like three sort of playlets that are interconnected. And she's a playwright who I first learned about in college. I think one of her plays was assigned to me in a class. And just of kind of like this generation of like postmodern off-Broadway playwrights, I just think she has such a unique voice and such a challenging voice. And you might remember her because she won the Pulitzer Prize a few years ago with Top Dog, Underdog. She doesn't shy away from things that make people uncomfortable, from hard subjects. Obviously, a play about war and its aftermath is all of that. And before we turned on the microphone, we've been talking about artists of color and women artists, and she is both. And it has a female director, Jo Bonney. And I think that's also something that I am excited to support, despite the fact that I've read a whole lot of her plays. I don't know that I've ever seen one produced. So that's also really exciting for me.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely see that. I mean, we're all big fans of the public here.
I mean, it's funny. When we like made our list, my original list for stuff to talk about today was just like the rest of their season. And then I realized and I went back and found some other stuff.
One of the things I am really looking forward to is called Facing Our Truth. And it is a series of 6 10-minute plays all about race and privilege, all written in the wake of the Trayvon Martin murder. And each one is by a different playwright. And these are playwrights who they're like out of the emerging playwright category, but they're not in the like, you know, don't have plays on Broadway yet category. So they're like in that middle zone, but are all spectacular.
Can you give us some names?
Really? You're going to make us like say random names?
While you're thinking of their names, I just want to say that it makes me sad that we're still putting Broadway as that like the marker of success for playwrights who are doing interesting work.
1,000 times agree. 1,000 times agree.
But I know what you mean.
Yeah. But I went to the world premiere of this series a month ago or so. And afterwards, several of the playwrights were there and they did a Q&A. And it was amazing because the plays had opened up this space of like comfort and security that led to some very honest responses from the playwrights about their experiences with race and privilege and power. That was one of the most interesting discussions I've been a part of about race in a really, really long time. And I thought it was amazing. And now these plays, which were commissioned by an organization called the New Black Fest, are going to be performed at various theaters all across the U.S. from, you know, California to Florida to New York. And
not as far as Maine.
I don't think.
I'm sure they'll get to Boston.
I was actually going to say Boston, and then I thought, I don't remember seeing a Boston theater on the list, but I'm sure at some point they will be in Boston. But the next time they're going to be performed in New York is at the National Black Theater in February. And I cannot urge people strongly enough to go see these plays. They are really, really beautiful. And now I am obsessed with each of the playwrights and will follow anytime any of them ever come to town.
As soon as you remember their names.
Don't worry, I'm going to edit this all together and it's going to sound so smart.
Can we also look up who wrote Look Back in Anger? So I don't sound like an idiot. I'm like, it's on the tip of my tongue.
I was like, you were talking about this, like, the marathon play, whatever it is, about as though it was like a title that everyone would know. And I mean,
it's a famous film, so I thought people would know it.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the Tony Richardson films.
Okay, I will name all the artists. But the reason I didn't want to do this, because I was sure, if I tried to do it from memory, I would have forgotten some. But I'm going to mess up some of their names.
You don't have to name all of them. Just name a couple.
There's just six of them. So it's Dominique Morisseau, Winter Miller, Dan O'Brien, who wrote the words, and then there's a musical element by Quetzal Flores. I don't know if I said that right. Marcus Gardley, who I am officially obsessed with. Every time he opened his mouth in the Q&A part, I just started bawling. It was like tears were like shooting out of my eyes. He was amazing. Mona Mansour.
Oh, I love Mona. I've met her. Yeah.
Tala Manasa and A. Ray Pamatmat.
Let's try that one again.
A. Ray Pamatmat. Okay, what did you want me to look up?
Look Back in Anger.
God, I'm so embarrassed. Why can't I remember it? I mean, it changed the face of British theater. It was at the Royal Court. It was the first time.
John Osborne.
Thank you.
Okay, you're up. Redeem yourself.
It's too late. I'll never be able to redeem myself. Okay, well, I did happen to see one of the pieces that's coming to Broadway, that's opening soon, that is on Broadway. And I saw one of the early previews of Machinal. Written by Sophie Treadwell. And what's interesting about this is it is a really great, again, British creative team that I'm intrigued by.
Is that the one with Rebecca Hall in it?
Yeah, it's starring Rebecca Hall. It's her Broadway debut. And it's this famous play from the 1920s, you know, by a female playwright, which was, you know, crazy and unheard of. very expressionistic, very weird. But, you know, the kind of thing that colleges do productions of all the time. And but the creative team, it's Lindsay Turner directing and Ez Devlin doing the set design. And they've just come off of doing Chimerica in London, which was a huge success and hit over there. And which happened to, design-wise, involve a large rotating cube. So in Machinal, there is also a large rotating stage.
Is it the same cube?
It is not the same cube. It is a totally different cube for completely different narrative reasons. But I do think it's important for people to know that there are cubes. They're coming. They're coming over from England. The cubes are taking over. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Also, Morgan Spector is in it, wearing boxer shorts and a wife beater. Very hot. I just want to say, if you're debating going to see this 90-minute play, that might get you over that hump.
I just want to jump in and say that this is a Roundabout show, and Roundabout has a lot of opportunities for discount tickets, including their HipTix program for young people, which I know that I still count, so I want to say this, 35 and under, which gets you $20 tickets, and there's no membership fee for that, and you just go on their website and sign up for it. Because I was talking about the show on Twitter with a young friend of mine who's like really into Rebecca Hall, and I was like, are you going? He's like, I don't want to spend $50. Like, you don't have to. So that's something to look for. I think they have other – I mean, they show up on TKTS and TDF and other places too.
Yeah, and I think it is, I mean, it's the kind of play that's so unusual. I think it's worth people seeing. If you're, you know, interested in theater, interested in the history of theater, this is one of those plays that I think you should see, and seeing a big budget production of one, it's worth it.
Cool. David? Okay, I'm going off script here because there was a news item that hit about 2 hours before we get together that I need to talk about.
I can't believe you're bringing this up.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
I can't. Okay.
Carly Rae Jepsen. Carly Rae Jepsen of Call Me Maybe and Canadian Idol fame is going into Cinderella on Broadway. And what is so fascinating to me is the like ocean of hatred that this unleashed among my friends on Twitter, who are just like, oh my God, how dare they? This is jumping the shark. I mean, this is a Franken show that was cobbled together from like leftover bits of Rodgers and Hammerstein castoffs that no one has had a nice thing to say about since the day that it started previews. And now all of a sudden we're upset because they cast a pop star. I actually had a very nice time at Cinderella. I did see it for free, and I tend to have nicer times at shows when I see them for free. But I found it to be charming. I thought it had like wonderful dancing. And if you just sort of give yourself over to it, it does what fairy tales are supposed to do, for good and for ill. And like, why not have a pop star who really became famous for most Americans on a very fairy tale like pop single? Fran Drescher of The Nanny fame is also going in as her wicked stepmother. Don't worry, that character doesn't sing. This is a show that everyone was sure was going to close when the original cast left, that they were talking about the King Kong musical was supposedly going into the Broadway theater. Now, like, this has definitely extended its life. There's still one bit more big announcement to come because Santino Fontana, who's playing the prince, is leaving to go be in Act One at Lincoln Center, which is another show I'm very excited about. I don't know. The line that I used on the internet was that Dorothy Collins was a second-rate pop singer that no one believed could act when she was cast in Follies, and elicited a very similar response among fans at the time. God bless them that there wasn't the internet. And that has gone on to be one of those performances that people who saw it say was like, you know, an indelible performance in the history of theater. I don't think Carly Rae Jepsen is going to give a Dorothy Collins level performance, but like
in that material especially, it'd be really hard to pull anything out of it that would be.
But like, for God's sakes, let's give her a chance. Like, it's Cinderella. Like, I mean, on some level, like, who cares?
I know.
Well,
I mean,
that was going to be my response.
Well, and it's not like the last star of Cinderella didn't also come from a reality TV show.
That's right, Laura Osnes. You're the one that I want. You leave it out of your bio, but we remember.
And I loved her, so. Who's next?
I am very curious about this play, The Realistic Joneses.
I'm so excited you brought that up.
It is a Will Eno play. Yes. Directed by Sam Gold.
If you could only see like the
tizzy
dance that Nicole's is doing.
With a really
say the magic words.
An amazing cast, Tracy Letts and Michael C. Hall and Marissa Tomei and Toni Collette. I'm just very excited for this, basically because of all these interesting people that are involved. Although it has not yet announced a theater, and therefore tickets are not on sale. Is that a cause for concern, or we just need to be patient?
I think they're probably waiting for something to post a closing
notice.
That's
what I would have thought, but just it's like when they originally announced it, it was supposed to start performances in February, open in March, and that is a very near time period.
Hmm. Was it going to go in where the Shakespeare shows have just extended?
I was going to say, like, that Janis Joplin show is hanging exactly on by a thread, but that's at the Lyceum, which is the theater that's considered less desirable because it's on the wrong side of Broadway, because apparently there is such a thing.
Though so much easier to get to when you work on Sixth Avenue.
Right.
But so painful if you live on the West Side.
And, like, do shows really get walk-up traffic? Is that what that's about?
I don't know.
Although I will say I rarely see shows on the east side of Broadway.
Well, because there aren't so many of them. I mean, it's not just because you're avoiding them. It's because...
Yeah, no, I know. There are fewer theaters over there.
Geographic block.
Although I will say I hate a court theater. That is my least favorite
Broadway
theater.
With the tiny, tiny ladies' room? The two-stall ladies' room?
That people use during the show, and you just sit there and listen to the toilet flush?
Yes, that theater.
It's terrible. Anyway, I'm really excited for that play. I think it sounds like it could be amazing. It had a world premiere at the Yale Rep in New Haven and got really, really positive reviews. So I think it sounds very exciting.
Incredible that a Will Eno play might come to Broadway, because he is not your kind of most accessible of the American playwrights writing today, but fucking delightful and so creative. And I am just, it's the one Sam Gold production I didn't see this past year. And of course, you know, self-flagellation. But I'm so excited that I'm going to get another chance to see it.
So here's where I admit that when I hear Will Eno in my head, I keep thinking Brian Eno. So, like, clearly he's not like a new wave pop star. So how do we know Will Eno?
One of his plays was shortlisted for the Pulitzer, but I don't think it won. So
it did
Thomas
not win.
Paine. Thomas Paine.
Yep.
He just had title Indeed at the Signature last season. I'm so terrible with dates and years.
He also has another play coming to the Signature this year.
Yes.
That is called The Open House,
which had the funniest press release that everybody was
reading
and
quoting.
Oh, I
remember that.
And in Middletown, which was, I think, one of his more well-known plays. He's just very dry, very droll, and very funny, but it's dark and funny in a way that I feel like there aren't a lot of playwrights who write in that just sort of beautifully bitter space. And, you know,
really, you like bitter?
I know, a little bit. So I just think he's a genius and I want to see more of his stuff, and I'm just excited that it's coming to Broadway.
All right, well, that made me even more excited.
Yay!
Okay, you're next.
Okay, I'm gonna throw this one out there because I'm curious. I didn't make it up to the ART to see it. All the Way, the play about Lyndon Johnson starring Bryan Cranston, but the reason I'm excited about it is, of course, never the main person, but someone else in the cast. Brandon Durden, who I love, who was in The Piano Lesson at Signature last year, also was in Detroit 67 at the Public, is coming in that production as well. He plays Martin Luther King Jr., and so I'm excited to see him in that play as well. Certainly curious to see Bryan Cranston in a role that, you know, some people really seem to like up in Cambridge. Well, and I think it's an interesting time period that, you know, lends itself very well to drama. I mean, obviously there were dueling Lyndon Johnson plays, allegedly.
What is that about? Like, in what universe does "let's go see a play about LBJ" like get anyone excited?
I guess, like, history nerds like me.
Is it about, like we've hit the point where people who were kids at that time are now, like, theater-going...
I mean, if the baby boomers
why.
Are driving the ticket sales and they were teenagers during that time period and they remember it and have, you know, certain feelings and reflections on that time period, then why not? I mean, a whole bunch of New York liberals, you know, patting themselves on the back.
I mean, I have a hard time getting excited about this play. I understand. Like, listen, if it's great, I'll go see it. But I just, there's nothing about it that says to me...
Did you see Frost Nixon?
I saw a regional production. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
But that, like, Frost Nixon was sold all about this, the dynamics of this relationship and the, you know, the fighting and the intrigue and, like, that. And, like, I've literally heard nothing about this play except that it's like about LBJ and maybe civil rights. And like, and oh my God, that guy from Breaking Bad. And so I feel like if there was really a compelling play here, not just a compelling star vehicle, like maybe we'd be hearing a little bit more about what the actual story is. Maybe that's just me being cynical.
I mean, considering Bryan Cranston was just coming off the Breaking Bad finale, I feel like that was going to overshadow the reportage on it, no matter what. But yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, do you know what the play is about?
Lyndon Johnson and the Civil Rights era. But that is, like, you know, an incredibly fruitful, interesting space. I don't know. Okay.
Look, if you haven't picked up on this yet in the course of this conversation, I'm also, you know, much more of a musicals guy. So for me to want to go see a play, like, it needs to, there needs to be much more of a pull. And so I guess, like, I'm a harder sell on a play, and I don't feel like they've been trying very hard.
They didn't give you the hook yet. You've been pulled in.
I like Bryan Cranston. I never saw Breaking Bad, but I was totally in for Malcolm in the Middle.
Okay, David.
So speaking of things that I don't know a whole lot about, actually at the same time as the Susan Laurie Park show is at the Public Lab, on one of their other stages at the Public, they have a new musical, called A Second Chance, which is by a guy named Ted Shen, who I know nothing about, except that he's writing the book, the lyrics, and the music, which is exceedingly rare and is either like great because it will be a singular artistic vision, or like a big disaster because there's a reason why musicals are often written by collaborators. Again, I really don't know a whole lot about it except that, oh my God, I so love the Public that I'm so willing to go to whatever they want to sell me.
It's the lemming here.
It's not a lemming. It's about earned artistic loyalty. You know, right? Like I've seen so many things there that have just either delighted me or challenged me or fascinated me. I've never gone away from a Public show in the last year and felt like it was a waste of time. So I'm so much more willing to take a chance there. The show is about an older couple who find romance after their original partners have gone away. I think one of them is a widow and one of them may be a divorcee. The note that I scribbled to myself was Chapter 2, the musical, although it's not actually based on the Neil Simon play Chapter 2. But the title, The Second Chance, reminded me of the theme song from the movie Chapter 2, which was the second time around.
I like you using the phrase going away, because all I could imagine was one was abducted by aliens. Too much Doctor Who this week.
Ooh, it could be time travel.
We won't know till we see it. But also, you know what? Like, I am someone who obsessively follows musical theater, and for there to be a new musical coming to a New York stage by an artist who I literally had never heard his name before I got the Public season announcement, it both speaks a lot about, you know, the Public's faith in him and therefore my excitement for him, but also like God, it's so exciting to just discover something new in a field where like so many people, like musicals are toiled away at for years and years and years, much longer than most straight plays, and go through so many versions and so like it's rare to be able to discover something really fresh and new for the first time, like in the theater, without having, you know, heard it or heard about it or seen it or whatever, and you know, on the internet or on the radio or whatever. So I'm excited to discover a new musical theater artist.
Did you discover anything about him after that? Where did this person come from?
No idea. I can Google him if you'd like. Ted Shen, if you're listening, tell us who you are. We want to know more about you.
Call this number. David, what's your cell?
Tweet me.
Okay, another show that I'm excited for is Kung Fu at the Signature Theater by David Henry Huang. It is a play with music about the life story of Bruce Lee, and I am a real sucker for a show with a lot of good dance, martial arts, and acrobatics, and I assume this will be that.
Have you seen the pre-production production photos? Because, oh my God.
Super hot.
Super hot. If you like abs, this is the show for you.
That should just be their tagline.
I mean, I think we've talked about it before. Like, theaters do not put enough sex on their posters, and they really should.
Yes.
I have a hard time with this because, like, especially since moving to New York, where, like, I'm starting to meet actors, like, professional actors that I also see on stage and realize that they're real people, because I spend a lot of time in the theater like really looking at the stage like it's a buffet and like, like kind of going through my mind like, God, weird, I can't talk about this on the podcast. But like, it's in a way, like, you know, I don't do that in movies because it feels so removed because it's on film and because they're, you know, generally on the other side of the country and they're not people that I've met. But like when I'm in a theater, like, oh my God, like when they're done performing, like I could go like, you know, run into them at a bar. And like, because of that, oh. And edit.
Oh no, that's staying in for sure. Yeah, I think this is going to be cool. I hope it's cool. I saw The Dance on the Railroad, which is more of a historical play, but also it's by the same person, but it also involves a lot of dance and combat martial arts. And it was, the choreography was beautiful. The movement was gorgeous. And I would think that this would reflect the same level of skill, if not even more advanced, because this is a, like a bigger production.
And this has been in development for a while. I mean, it's been a long time coming. And I mean, he's such a, Bruce Lee was such a huge figure. So I'm really curious to see how this is going to come out. I hope it'll be great.
Let's close by talking about anything we're going to see in the very near future. I personally am traveling for the next week, going to a wedding in Maine. Weddings in Maine in January.
Awesome.
We have to send you, we did one of these on the Kitson show.
Oh, yeah.
Where we were like in the fucking weeds acting potentially insane, and we don't know if we really want to release it or not.
Nice.
So we're gonna send it to you.
I feel like you also led the conversation there. I just want to say, like,
oh my God, actual finger pointing.
I mean, it's your podcast. I'm just here to play with it.
Okay, fine. So if it went in an insane direction and I led it there, then I take responsibility for that.
So this is like the first time since I moved to New York where I feel like I'm not holding tickets for anything coming up. I have like, I subscribe to Encores and I have tickets to Guys and Dolls at Carnegie Hall, which is, but I think neither of those is until March. And like, I mean, I'm sure I'll see stuff. Oh, you know what? I made a pact with my friend Aaron that we're going to go see La Soiree, which is an attempt to move kind of like the downtown burlesque vaudeville circus tent spiegel tent ethos uptown a little bit. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I saw a ticket offer and a couple friends who had seen it enjoyed it, and you know, I'll see pretty much anything for cheap.
I'm seeing The Night Alive at the Atlantic Theater Company, which is the Don Marr production of the Connor McPherson play, and I hate Connor McPherson, so this should be really intriguing.
I can totally see why you signed up for that.
I mean, like any company that I feel like I subscribe to, there have been good and bad things in the mix. And it's kind of one of the things when you're a subscriber, you just, you know, you kind of buy onto a season, you buy onto, you know, a theater, and you know, fingers crossed, you get kind of a mix of things that you're going to like. And, you know, The Atlantic, it's been, you know, some pluses and minuses. Same with Playwrights. And, you know.
So I have a hard time understanding, like, why then subscribe? Why not just buy tickets to things you want to see?
I think for me, I know I was trying to maximize what I was going to see in terms of, you know, like there were things that like if I'm automatically signed up for it, then I will go see it. And since I've sort of come back to theater later and have like missed out on a lot of writers in the last couple of years, I thought it was sort of like eating my vegetables to kind of do it this way. Also, I don't get discounts. There's no, I'm too old. So
and too successful.
It's cheaper for me if I'm going to go see, you know, three or four shows at a company, then I might as well just subscribe.
I also
and
feel
the flexibility
like,
when I cancel tickets, which happens a lot with my job. So,
yeah, that is nice. But for me, I subscribe to theaters where I think the quality of the work they do is so good that I want to see everything they do. At the Public, I want to see everything.
Right. And ironically, the Public has a membership model, not a subscription
yes,
model.
But I feel that way also about Playwrights. I want to see, even though there are things they do there that I dislike passionately, there inevitably something I see there will be on my top 10 list at the end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even stuff that I dislike, I feel like is a better use of my time than doing just about anything else I could do.
And I think, you know, especially with Playwrights, I think the programming there tends to be a lot of interesting new writers that, I might not have sought out myself. So I sort of trust in their programming to program for me. And I think, again, with The Atlantic, I think they've been bringing over some really interesting international writers. And that's, you know, something really important to me. And, you know.
And with Playwrights specifically, inevitably I will see something there, and in a few years I will see more things by that same artist. And I like, even if I didn't like the first thing, I like having the history.
Encores, I subscribe because I know, regardless of what they're going to pick, that those are three shows, concerts, whatever you want to call them, that I like for sure want to see. But otherwise, like, I very much enjoy the membership model at the Public. I'm a member at Lincoln Center Theater as well, because I feel like I get the benefits of discounted tickets and advanced sales, but with none of the obligation, which you could say is everything that's wrong with my generation.
I canceled my Roundabout membership. That was the first membership I got when I came to the city.
And that's the one that I begrudgingly renew each year. And this year, the cabaret ticket made it worth it, just because I was like, this. And sometimes I that's another thing. It's like, I don't want to get locked out of things.
I just don't understand the excitement about cabaret. And like, I loved that production in 1998. And maybe, I guess, if I hadn't seen the production that ran for like almost 10 years, like maybe I'd be more excited. But like, geez, the way that this town is like turning backflips about a museum production, like a, you know, they're bringing back a revival of a revival. Like, Jesus Christ, people, get an original idea. Like, it's just, and look, I subscribe to Encores. I appreciate people who want to like revisit things from the past. Like, I totally get that. But
It's a little bit of the recent past.
So. It's the recent past. It's not, you know, it's a production that was so well documented. There was the British version was even recorded for television. You can watch it on YouTube illegally. You know, they bring back the original star. Like, you know, they did that with Joel Grey and Cabaret in the 80s, and it was like it was sort of a disaster. So like, I'm not sure why this won't be. Look, Cabaret is a brilliant show, and Alan Cumming, I think, you know, is a brilliant performer in the right.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if Taylor Mack was the MC?
Oh my God. See, like, that would get me in the door.
That would be amazing.
And like, I love musicals, and I.
So are you not going?
Oh, I'm sure I'll go, but I'm not paying full price. And I'm not buying tickets now, and I'm not.
All right. You know, anything else?
What else can I rant about?
Thank you so much for joining us on the Max Moo podcast. Additional information about all of the shows and theater companies we discussed is at maxmoo.com. Just click on podcasts. You can find all of us on Twitter. Maximoo is at MAXAMOO. Nicole is at mildly bitter. That's MILDLYBITTER. David is at it's DeLevy. That's ITSDLEVY. And I'm at Lindsay Behrens. LINDSAYBARENZ. See you next week.